Next guest is uniquely suited to providing us some insight into how the investment world views the current and future prospects for book publishing, particularly trade publishing, in this time of enormous change, as we've been covering all day. Brian Napack is a senior advisor at Providence Equity Partners, which has on the order of $27 billion of capital under management. But before joining Providence earlier this year, Brian was the president of Macmillan from 2006 to 2011. And prior to that, his broad experience included the founding of Disney Educational Publishing, co-founding Disney Interactive, and executive work at Simon & Schuster. And in that way, in which the world often, when things are working right, dovetails with what's happening at conferences. I just got the press release about 10 minutes ago that private equity financier Leon Black, who founded Apollo, his family has just bought Fiden Press. So we're reminded of the close overlap between the private equity world and the publishing world. Although we're going to talk to Brian about perhaps a slightly larger scale of potential acquisition or investment. So for those who don't know exactly how far the media and information Goliath that is Providence extends beyond that whopping amount of capital I mentioned, can you just tell people a little bit more about the firm as well as the kinds of investments you're interested in now?
Sure. So for those of you who don't know, Providence is probably the world's leading investor in media at this point in time. It's a large private equity fund, and what it does is it invests in media, information, communications, and increasingly education. And in fact, in the last 4 or 5 years, has become the largest education investor in the world, outpacing even Pearson in both revenue and in investment in its portfolio. And so what Providence does is what all private equity funds do. They look to invest in exceptional companies with exceptional management team where they can find growth that is otherwise unattainable. So from our perspective, what we're looking for is we're looking for companies that are taking a different approach to traditional markets and participating in new markets. We have been very focused in the last couple of years on looking at traditional media assets under the belief that we're in a time of enormous change, and change creates opportunity. Ultimately, private equity, venture capital, and other professional investors are risk capital. They look for places that others wouldn't necessarily invest. So in some ways, looking at trade publishing, educational publishing, these are counterintuitive opportunities. Personally, I'm passionate about these spaces, and I believe that there's a good foundation, mostly because people like to read books and they're willing to pay for them. On the education side, people are in need of greater access to education, better education, and more affordable education. And so all of these things make for significant opportunities. So I've spent the last 6 months at Providence, so I'm pretty new there. But in that time, basically, my role is to help them find new investments, manage those investments. And my focus really has been on some of these traditional media assets, publishing assets significantly, and educational opportunities.
So to pick up on that theme, when you and I were preparing for this conversation, you sort of pointed out that trade publishing has attracted somewhere between very little and modest investment of any kind of scale over the last 15 years or so. And we know that of those investments, certainly the big private equity investments in publishing, primarily during the credit bubble years leading up to the world economic crisis, ended poorly, leading to either big write-offs, refinancings. So why were we able to get you to come to Frankfurt here today to talk to people? What is the current investment outlook for publishing, and why is this even on your radar?
The free lunch.
You'll have it by about 7.
Ultimately, what an investor of any substantial scale is looking for are places where there's a pocket of demand. If you look back over the course of the last 20 years, traditional media assets have not been particularly good investments for anybody, and that extends beyond publishing through to other parts of the media business. But as you look through these segments, they have cycles. And so if you look at the television or the movie business, one would have said 2 or 3 years ago, these were terrible businesses. They were about to collapse. Turns out television's having one of its biggest years ever. The music business is now stabilized and money is being made. It's not necessarily being made in the same way it was made before, but it's being made. So the job of a good investor ultimately is to look at places where there is fundamental consumer demand and ask yourself, how can we take advantage of that demand in better or different ways? Does it make sense to haul off and buy one of the major publishing companies? Well, that depends on a lot of things, which we should get into. But the idea of consumer demand in the book business, which has been very stable for a long period of time, is a good place where we can build on. So just because people lost money in the past, that almost attracts the private equity investor. The private equity investor looks at that space and says, people still reading a lot of books. Why aren't those companies taking advantage of the opportunities in that market? And there are a lot of good reasons. Having wrestled with these things for the last 6 years with Macmillan, I know that these challenges that the industry is facing are real and present, but that doesn't mean that there's not a good market on the other side.
So as you're thinking about the possibility of becoming an investor in trade publishing, what are you looking for? What's the profile of a company that has some of the attributes that you think make it attractive to you, and that can, with perhaps that quieter profile of private equity investment and support, can grow and refashion itself and be something that you want to own?
Yeah, I think that's what you just said is actually important to dwell on before I launch into sort of the criterion, which is that one of the things private equity does often, if not usually, is it takes a company from being public to being private, or being heavily burdened by debt to being a little less burdened by debt. It comes in and allows a company to move under the radar for a period of time where it can recraft and reorient itself in order to hopefully emerge on the other side as a better, stronger company. And that's exactly what I think is needed in trade publishing right now. It's hard to make an argument that publishing companies, in fact, media companies of any type, content-oriented companies, ought to be publicly held, or held with tremendous amounts of debt that require quarterly debt service, such that we can't invest today in what we know is needed for tomorrow. We know that on the other side of this, well, we know a couple things, and I've said it a couple of times already, the first one, which is that we know people like books. We know they're going to read books. The definition of books may change, but people like them. What's more is people have proven willing to pay for them. So we know that on the other side that will be the case. But in order to take advantage of that in the long run, we believe, or I believe, that publishing companies need to invest in a bunch of things that will not have a week or a month return. They won't have even a year-on-year return. Rick was talking about this earlier. The amount of overinvestment you have to do in order to develop the skills necessary is significant. And your debt holders and or your public stockholders are not necessarily going to be very pleased with those investments. And the things are, many of the things that have been talked about today by Helmut and by Marcello and by Rebecca and by Rick, and these are the things that we really need to do. We need to make sure that above all we're developing a consumer relationship in a way that publishers never had before. So what I'm looking for is I'm looking for companies that are on the leading edge of that. So you look at some of the things that Rick is doing to listen to what's going on in the marketplace and follow the conversation. You look at things that we did at Macmillan, things like Tor.com, which is an incredibly valuable property in the science fiction area at this point in time. It took us 5 years to build that. That would have been very difficult to invest the amount of time and brain power in Tor.com if we were a publicly held company. In fact, I would argue it would be almost impossible. We started with a valuable asset, which we can get to in a moment, but the truth of the matter is that time horizon for return on investment in a thing like Tor.com, which is one of the leading science fiction sites on the internet, would be unpalatable. The first thing that I'm looking for is companies that get the nature of the marketing relationship that needs to be built with the audience. It's going to be built differently in fiction, in nonfiction. It's going to be built differently in the genres versus it is in other areas. But that audience relationship needs to be built for all the reasons that Peter and others were talking about earlier. So that being said, the second thing has always been the first thing that we're very good at, and that's editorial. So the companies that we are interested in are companies that do have a big backlist, because I think that big backlist has enormous latent value in the internet, in ebooks, in digital as we go forward. It's not always clear to those observers, but what we found at Macmillan over time, when we digitized that backlist content, is books that were selling 0 to 5 copies a year, all of a sudden we're selling hundreds of copies a year, which may or may not be a lot, but when you add hundreds and you multiply that by the thousands in the backlist, all of a sudden we had a couple of big blockbuster bestsellers every year just because those books were out there and we were allowing them to be discovered. So what I would be looking for is a company that understands the value of that and investing in assets, but it goes beyond just picking good books and hopefully having a backlist. It moves, what I believe is that publishers have to move to, and it's a difficult conversation, they have to move to take a broader perspective to rights than they have in the past. 150 years ago, book publishers backed themselves into a corner by giving up all other rights other than the ones that they were concerned about at one moment in time. Well, it just doesn't work anymore. Ultimately, book publishers, all of you, are creating value that is being exploited by many others. Well, it turns out that if you put the money and the time into creating a property, the primary value that will be developed will be in the long tail, and that long tail will have many tails. It'll be in many different formats, many different geographies. So when I'm asked what I'm looking for, the two that I always come to is product and marketing, really in the other order, marketing and product. And then beyond that, there are a couple other things. So the third thing on the list is, I think moving to a lean infrastructure, a lean, nimble infrastructure is critical. So a publishing company that has an effective digital workflow that allows for the efficient and effective creation of content, formatting into the various formats it needs to be in, is critical. Beyond that, the physical infrastructure, one can argue that most publishers should go to having no fulfillment infrastructure whatsoever, no warehouses, no pick pack lines and so forth. I think there's a good argument to be made for that. I don't think it's right for all publishers. Some publishers, on the other hand, over-index in that area and they can provide those services to others. But I now believe it is no longer a defensible advantage for most publishers to have that. It used to be core to the defensible advantage. So I think that's critical as well. And the fourth thing is, I think, a global perspective on the industry. I think gone are the days when we can think about this industry in the region-specific way that it has been often thought of. I do believe for the foreseeable future, French publishers need to be French publishers, Italian publishers need to be Italian publishers, U.S. publishers need to be U.S. publishers, but we need to have the ability to look out over the world, and we need to be able to develop the relationships and exploit those markets on behalf of our authors, because ultimately that's what it's about. I can't remember who said it earlier, so I won't misquote, but somebody earlier talked about the value proposition. I think it was Dominique. The value proposition we have to provide to our authors as publishers is what this is all about, because he who owns the rights wins, and you won't own the rights unless you can prove that you can curate and create a great product, that you can find an audience, hopefully have a pre-established audience that you can deliver that book to, that you can get it out there quickly and effectively so that you can service ultimately what the author wants, which is to get to as broad a possible audience as possible. And of course, we're looking for great management teams. That's the thing that sort of goes without saying.
I want to probe a little further for just a minute on what I think was point number 4, which is where you were talking primarily about legacy infrastructure, because it begs the second question, right, which is scale. Is scale friend or enemy now, particularly again? I mean, you run a big company, you're obviously looking to make investments of scale more or less as a prerequisite, because you can't really afford to be buying small things unless, I guess, you have a roll-up strategy. But in general, as you look out at the landscape, is scale friend or enemy, and which parts of scale do you think are going to last and are the valuable parts now?
Yeah, I think that's a very well-worded question. For better or worse, I do think scale really matters now. I went for a period of time where this is 4, 5, 6 years ago, where I believed that if you had enough scale, you were fine, meaning that you didn't actually have to be Harper, a Hachette, or a major publisher to succeed. But those guys have some advantages that others have to make sure they can compensate for. Those advantages are different than they used to be. It's no longer in a fulfillment infrastructure. It's no longer in a royalty system. But it is in the ability to acquire the best product, to invest in things, to invest in things that can sell, to invest in the marketing infrastructure. I think that the scale of having a backlist with brands, a backlist with product that people want, is going to be immensely helpful in this transition period that we're going through. We are going through a transition period that could last 3, 5, 7 years, could last 10 years. During that period of time, the ability to leverage the assets that are on your balance sheet, I think, is going to be critical. So I think it's very important. I just think it's different than it used to be.
And to turn the conversation away that may be even more productive for some of the people in the room, let's say private equity has a certain reputation, as you hinted at, which is that often by the time private equity is ready to buy, it means bad things have happened. Or market price has come down and favors an opportunistic purchase or sale. And somewhat hauntingly to some in the trade, we've seen a lot of properties go on the market, particularly in the U.S. this year, and either fail to sell, be sold for parts, be sold for the list, not come close to meeting buyers' expectations, and we're even starting to see that in some other territories. So for forward-looking managers or owners who are in the room now, what can and should they be doing from an investment perspective now to try to avoid the fate where they come calling to you as a last resort rather than a first resort?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do think that first of all, private equity has a mixed reputation with its involvement in companies. You look at the examples of what happened at Houghton Mifflin and certain other places, and the presence of private equity isn't always a sign that somebody's looking for a lot of growth or looking for a lot of ultimately strategic opportunity. I can't speak to other private equity firms. We are a growth-oriented private equity firm. We're interested in finding companies with potential. So if I were talking to the manager of the CEO of a publishing company, which I suppose I am, after all, what I would say is you have to make choices. You can't do everything. In the old days, we used to play a portfolio approach to publishing, where you'd invest in, you know, in the case of Macmillan, 2,000, 2,500 titles a year. You'd put a little bit of effort into all of them, and you'd hope one of them would succeed. Well, with the noise and the clutter and the difficulty with discovery, I don't think you can do that anymore. So what I would be looking to do if I were the CEO of a company is make a series of bets on products that you will be with for a long period of time, make a series of bets on audience relationships that you choose to have. You know, the reason I always bring up the Tor.com example is the truth, just like Osprey is, they will be valuable to their audience no matter what. Whereas Middle East fiction list of a varied nature is going to have a little bit more difficulty finding its audience. So I think making choices is key. And obviously what I would point back to is my earlier list, right? My earlier list of the rights you want to acquire, of the marketing capability that you want to develop. You know, make the choice. Don't spend your time building a new warehouse when you could be developing an audience relationship. So I think it's choices up and down that line that need to be made.
And to finish up, since it's so much in the news lately and we have you here, and now that we know that you're interested, what do you think, and I'm going to put you in more of a crystal ball context necessarily than a personal or a Providence equity context, but what's the likelihood that anything big enough to interest a firm like yours in trade publishing actually comes to market soon? I mean, as we said, not only have we not seen meaningful investment or transfer of ownership in the last 15 years, but we've had rumors throughout that 15-year period that more or less everything was either up for sale or imminently for sale. The cycle now is, you know, will investors get new management of Pearson to let go of Penguin? When Sumner Redstone lets go of his cloak of immortality, does the place of Simon & Schuster in the kingdom change? Does Frank Pearl's unfortunate passing change the relationship with Perseus? Mm-hmm. We could go down a long list, and it's happening actually with a lot of the European conglomerates too. So we saw Flammarion be sold off by RCS as they focused on core market. So are you seeing an environment in which you think that some of the traditional ownership ties are going to get loosened or be subject to a different view?
Yeah, I think we are in a staring into a crystal ball to which there are no answers. I'll say a couple things. First of all, one doesn't have to be a $500, $700 million or $1 billion company to be interesting to us. We are interested in growth-oriented strategies that often are messy, that require the assembly of things. I'll give you the example of a publishing company on the education side called Ascend Learning, which used to be Jones and Bartlett. Anybody remember Jones and Bartlett? Jones and Bartlett became the core of what is an extremely successful health and medical-oriented publishing company now that has completely redefined what it means to be a publisher in that space, and some of the others are having trouble keeping up with them. And the way they did it is, and this is an important message, which I should have delivered earlier, which is, so I'll take this, take this opportunity to do now before I answer that really good question that you gave to me. So what Ascend Learning did is it made over time 26 different acquisitions. Those acquisitions were in accreditation and homework systems, educational management systems. They were technology. They were technology products so that Jones and Bartlett could go to market and be not only a provider of content in the way that we traditionally think of it, but rather a provider of content, tools, and services. And so what they did is they redefined what a publisher was. If we cling to the, we as publishers cling to the old definition of product, we are shortchanging our audience. Because when the audience goes online and starts playing with an iPad, their definition of what content is changes, their needs change. And we could say, well, yes, but I'm always going to give them a 300-page book. But the truth of the matter is they're going to want other things. So having said that, looking at the assets that are available today, that exist today in the marketplace, the really large ones, you can go down all of them, and you can, with the probable exception of Random House, and you can make a case for why it doesn't fit with the strategy of the owner, and it could be on the market at some point in the future. I don't know that any of them will, but it's certainly possible and plausible. My guess would be at some point in the next couple of years, one of the three or four obvious candidates will come on the market because we're in a world where the public markets favor specialization, they don't favor diversification, and each one of these assets is in the ones that I'm thinking of, which are sort of obvious. I just don't want to prognosticate on specific names.
Sure.
May as well, right? Simon & Schuster doesn't fit inside of CBS. Everyone knows that. It never has fit inside CBS. Everyone's always said that Simon & Schuster would be available for the right price. I actually don't know that to be true because I know that people have talked about buying it at that price. HarperCollins, now with the spinoff from News Corp, does it make sense for HarperCollins to be part of a publishing company with a bunch of newspaper assets and an emerging education company? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I can make arguments both ways. On down the list. There's every chance that something will happen in the next few years. And if so, we'd be happy to take a look at it.
Great. Well, you planted the flag here. I thank you for joining us. I think it's important that we keep understanding how the world outside of publishing looks at us and both our growth and investment potential. So it's been a valuable addition, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.